The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Maureen mentioned there was some flyers, and I think it was on the calendar too. Actually, this feels a little bit loud, a little bit like echoey for me. I don't know how it is for you guys. Now maybe that's a little bit low. Yeah, so I have to keep on talking. So, okay, there we go. That sounds better. Thank you, Maureen. So it's, as I was starting to say, the course on the hindrances for some flyers on the calendar was going to start today. It's kind of what happens when you have an all-volunteer center, right? All of us are doing a little piece of it, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't all come together in the right way. But I thought that I would talk about something tonight that's related to the hindrances, to kind of like set the stage for this, for what will be happening next week in this time slot. And also, I had given a talk last week at Tuesday morning, and so the talk I'm going to give tonight is also kind of ties in with that. So it felt like a good topic. So what is this topic, you may be wondering? Concentration. I'd like to talk about concentration tonight. So in the Buddhist teachings, there's a simile of a goldsmith. And there's so many similes. If you read the Buddhist scriptures, the suttas, this was a really a key way in which the Buddha taught. And I think they're really great. It kind of helps make it alive and personable and instead of abstract. Right? There's also just lots of lists, but there's also similes. There's all kinds of things in there. And this simile is about a goldsmith. And I'm going to paraphrase wildly. That the Buddha is describing how does a goldsmith mold gold to make bracelets, necklaces, earrings, or whatever the goldsmith wishes. And in the simile, the goldsmith takes gold and puts it in a receptacle, a crucible, and heats it up. And then the goldsmith has to pay attention and either sprinkle some water on it to get the temperature to cool down a little bit, maybe blow on the gold to get the heat to go up a little bit, or there's also a time to just watch and just pay attention to how the gold is. I like this very much because I've never worked with gold, but I've done all kinds of things where you have to adjust just a little bit too much, not quite enough, and then or sometimes just pay attention. For me, a lot of cooking is this way, or a lot of baking. Right, cooking, we're just turning up and down the dial on our stoves, right? But back then, right? They were blowing on it, or maybe adding some more fuel, different fuel. I don't know exactly. So these three things of blowing on it, sprinkling a little bit of water, or just watching. And in this simile, to blow on it was to have a little more energy, add some energy. To sprinkle a little water was to cultivate concentration. And to just watch was with equanimity. So in this simile, concentrated is to kind of cool down something that may be like bubbling and hot, and maybe we can think a bit agitated. I don't know if gold boils or bubbles, but something like that. And so we can think about this as concentration is often the antidote to energy, feeling restless, or having, I'll say this, just feeling restless is kind of agitated feeling. But also, there can be too much concentration too in the assembly, right? If we sprinkle too much water on the gold, then it just gets too cold and you can't work with it and make bracelets or earrings, whatever you'd like to do. That often isn't the problem for many meditators, that they're too concentrated. But it can happen, especially on retreats. I have this experience of trying to get concentrated, and instead of getting concentrated in a nice way, just kind of like getting a dull mind, just kind of getting a maybe foggy, kind of things aren't quite clear. There can be a little pleasantness about this in the beginning because you feel like you're in this cottony, fluffy place. But then you just kind of like sink and you start to feel like, oh, and it's called sinking mind. It kind of robs you of a sense of vitality and well-being. And more specifically about concentration is that when we talk about the hindrances, classically, part of what the hindrance is, quote unquote, what are they hindering? Concentration. It's not the only thing they're hindering. They're also hindering being present and some mindfulness. But a classical way that they're described in the early teachings is that they're getting in the way of concentration. So this talk about introducing concentration is a way to kind of also introduce the hindrances, as the hindrances are a way that really support concentration, or removing the hindrances are a way. And I'll get to that towards the end of the talk. But you may ask, well, why do we want to get concentrated? Isn't just mindfulness sufficient? And maybe even like, what's the difference between mindfulness and concentration? There's a number of ways we can talk about this. One way that is like consistent with how I practice, what I'm going to do, like these two different practices, has to do with the objects that we choose. But before I go there, I want to say that when we are really practicing mindfulness, whether you intend to or not, you are also cultivating concentration. Concentration will just naturally be developed the more mindfulness you work with. It's just a byproduct. So sometimes this separation between mindfulness and concentration can be artificial. It's not really there. There's a way that you can look at the practice where it's not there at all. There's also a way that you could highlight the differences of them. So maybe it's more like a spectrum or something like this. So with really a broad brush, mindfulness is more about inclusivity in this way, that maybe you may choose to be mindful on the breath, to pay attention to the sensations of breathing. But then while you're practicing mindfulness, you may notice that the body, there's an uncomfortable sensation in the body. And if that becomes really compelling, the instructions are to let go of being mindful, aware of the breath, and just turn your attention towards the body. And let that become the object. Because what you don't want to do is like get into this struggle, right, between the breath and this sensation and this feeling like, oh, everything would be fine if only that sensation in the body would go away. And that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to just bring our attention back to whatever object is the most compelling with mindfulness. So mindfulness is inclusive in that the objects can be changing all the time. Maybe there's a sensation in the body, but then that softens, and then you return to the breath. Maybe there's sounds, and you can just note, like, oh, sound, and you come back to the breath. And this is a lot what Inez is going to talk about on the series of mindfulness that starts next week on Wednesdays. This 5-week series is like how to do this, how to start with the breath, and then to move to different objects in a very smooth way without making any of this a problem. So that's more mindfulness. And then concentration It's a little bit more just choosing an object and just staying in a very gentle way. Not necessarily noticing focusing on the way that it may be changing or fluctuating, or paying attention to other things in your awareness. So I tend to think of it more as an exclusive practice. We're kind of letting the things out there just be out there without really intentionally turning our attention to them. We're always kind of staying with one particular object. As it happens, we often use the breath both for mindfulness and concentration. With mindfulness, you would like let go of the breath intentionally and go with something else. With concentration, your mind may be letting go. That's what minds do. But you most likely will come back to the breath. These are kind of like big, broad brush descriptions. There's other ways to do both mindfulness practice and other ways to do concentration practice. But why would we want to cultivate concentration? Isn't insight sufficient? Can't we just do mindfulness meditation? And I would say that mindfulness meditation is sufficient. It can help bring clarity to your life, help bring some peace and some ease. It can take you to liberation too. But concentration can really help support mindfulness practice. And for those of you who are familiar with the Buddhist teachings and their myriad of lists, will know that concentration is in a number of important lists. The seven factors of awakening, so it's an element of these with six other things that can contribute to the awakening experience, the enlightenment experience. I'm not going to go through all these lists, so if you're familiar with seven factors, maybe I'll say this, that the seven factors of awakening, there's energizing factors and there's tranquilizing factors in this group of seven. And concentration is in the tranquilizing bucket of the seven factors of awakening. Concentration is also the eighth element in the Eightfold Path on the way to Nibbana, to awakening. It's the last one. That's all the other elements that help support the arising of concentration, which then is part of the leading to liberation, awakening. I'm using this word liberation, awakening. You could also just say peace, ease, freedom. And concentration is also one of the five faculties, these qualities of mind that really help support the practice and really help support our life. And again, with that five faculties, concentration is balanced with energy, just like in the simile of the goldsmith. So we see that concentration has a big role in these classic teachings of how to find more ease and peace. But independent of the Buddhist teachings, we can use the idea or maybe the sensations of concentration as guideposts for our practice. Just the felt experience. When we're practicing, whether it's daily life practice or formally sitting meditation practice, we could ask ourselves, am I feeling more or less agitated? Am I feeling more or less calm? Do I have more or less clarity? See, calmness and clarity are some of the hallmarks of concentration. So we can use that to help guide, what we're doing, is this going towards greater freedom or is it going away from greater freedom? This feeling of concentration, this feeling of not being so agitated, a feeling of having more calmness, maybe having some more clarity, This makes sense. We all know this, that when we're in the throes of feeling anger or having a temper tantrum, that doesn't lead to greater freedom. And we're also pretty agitated and most likely not seeing things clearly then. But importantly, concentration also prepares the mind, helps create the conditions in which there can be insight. We can have a really deep understanding of the way things are, which supports a profound letting go. Letting go of all kinds of things. Letting go of those things primarily that get in the way of peace and freedom. Letting go that can be mundane to letting go to feeling like you have to win the particular arguments to more profound teachings, letting go of a particular sense of self and instead going to greater and greater freedom. So in this way, concentration supports mindfulness. This having these insights, an insight is a mindfulness practice, but mindfulness after concentration can be really powerful. Really powerful. Such if we did think of mindfulness as a telescope that helps us to see things far away that we can't see with the naked eye, the concentration is the tripod, thank you. I couldn't think of a word. It's the tripod that sits underneath the telescope that helps stabilize it so we can see even better and even more clearly. And in the Buddha's description of his awakening experience, he described the quality of his mind right the moment before his awakening. And he described it as being concentrated, purified, cleansed, unblemished, rid of defilement, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability. I like this because actually it feels these words, I can relate it to a little lump of gold, and that, right, it needs to, gold that is pure has a different properties and behaves differently than gold that has is all these impurities in it. But also that it's malleable and wieldy. So a concentrated mind is not brittle. It's not like holding on to the object really tight and such that, or whatever you're focused on, so that it can't move about or notice things if it needs to. It can be wieldy and the way I understand it is like the opposite of brittle. There can be a way in which we practice concentration. It can be a feeling of, I gotta get concentrated, and there's this tightness that happens with the striving and the real pushing towards trying to get concentrated. And with that, the mind tends to get a little fragile, and when we hear a sound, then there's like a moment of irritation, like how dare that person like make that sound or something like this when we're trying to do concentration. So it's wieldy, a sense of purity in the sense that it's not going so many different directions all at once, but instead the process of becoming more and more concentrated is like just getting increasingly calm, increasingly steady, and moving away from being scattered, moving away from being disorganized, moving away from being agitated. I think probably many of us have this experience, even just a little bit, right, with a regular meditation practice, that maybe even why we meditate is to find this little more steadiness, this calmness, and less scattered, disorganized, agitated. But there can also be a feeling of being unified. And what I mean by that is, often we don't notice But there can be a commentary that's going with our experience. And that commentary can be like, oh, there you go again. Not staying with the breath. Or, gee, when is this meditation period going to end? Or, I wish that I had gone to the bathroom before I went to sit down. Or, like, all these little things that are kind of like they're little forays into thought that go. Their sense of unified is like this, all different aspects of ourselves kind of start to come and start to calm down. And there isn't a sense of struggle, and there isn't a sense of pushing away, right? Trying to make everything that potentially could disrupt our concentration, make that thing go away. That's not happening. But often when we think about the word concentration, there can be this sense of that we have to force our minds to not wander. I know when I first was practicing, I really had this idea of like cracking the whip. That kind of feeling, like I had to get concentrated, like this sense of making it happen. Not surprisingly, I didn't get concentrated, but that was kind of the way that I was approaching it, that I had to kind of like force things to happen. But what happens when we approach concentration practice, or this idea that we want to get settled in that particular way with trying to force it? There's just naturally a tension that gets created in the mind between the parts of the mind that are going off and having these four ways, which is perfectly natural and is what the mind does. But then there's this tension between, dang it, come back to the breath. And so there's this push-pull that's going on that may be subtle, but it creates a tension of the mind naturally going one way off, leaving the object, and then the response to it being not one of calmness. There's like a little like flame of agitation or something. And the more calm we get, the more we notice these little flames of agitation. We may not notice them in the beginning. So when Gil Fronstahl has wrote this handout for the Eightfold Path program, he did some Dharma practice days, and then, you know, now there's this big Eightfold Path program, which I highly recommend if anybody hasn't taken it. And I helped teach that a number of years ago. I myself was a student of it, and it wasn't until just recently that I noticed that in the handout and in the teachings for concentration, Gil writes, it can be helpful to assume that a full 50%, that is half of developing concentration, is letting go and relaxing. Just like so much in our lives, we often think that if we want to attain something, then we have to apply effort, we have to strive, we have to set a goal with milestones and maybe put it in our planner, you know, these types of things, right? But this idea that, oh, concentration is something different. Half, and this is consistent with my experience, half of the way to get concentrated is to relax, to find some ease, and to let go, to somehow like soften anything that we're holding on to. This includes ideas that we have, beliefs that we have about how the practice should be going, about how we should be, or how quiet the room has to be, or all these types of things. So half of it is about relaxation. And I would say that my concentration practice took a leap forward when I was on a retreat, and for some physical reasons, I had to do laying down meditation. So I had already been on the retreat for some time, so I had some certain amount of continuity of mindfulness and a certain amount of concentration. But then when I tried to meditate laying down, I discovered that I actually got quite concentrated because I was just more relaxed laying down. That was wow. I would have never expected that. But I say this with a caveat because laying down meditation is not so easy. Because, let's see, what do we usually do when we lay down, close our eyes, and start to relax, right? We fall asleep. So it's definitely something that has to be learned. And I had started this when I already had a certain amount of concentration. I had been days, I don't remember, maybe even weeks on retreat. So I offer that. But that for me, that was a big wake-up call. Like, oh, right. There was some tension in my body and mind that I hadn't even noticed that somehow could soften when I was lying down. But for most people, concentration practice, if you wanted to develop concentration, it takes patience and consistency. It's not something that we can do right away, most likely. There are people who have a natural inclination for concentration. And I was talking to Lee Brazenton, some of you may know, he lives here in the Bay Area, and he teaches concentration retreats. And I had asked him, is there a difference in people that are able to get concentrated? And he noted that, and I, when I think about this, it makes complete sense, that if your profession or your livelihood or the way that you spend your time is to be paying attention to lots of different things and making sure that things are okay. Preschool teacher has to, keep an eye on all the kids and take care of them. Or somebody who manages an office has to be responsive to the other people in the office and often getting interrupted or something like this. Those type of people who spend their day taking care and being aware of other things, mindfulness is a little bit easier for them than concentration. In contrast to somebody like a scientist who spends hours looking in a microscope, right? And whatever they do when they look in the microscope, or perhaps a mathematician who has to really focus their minds. So it's just natural that some of us have, it's a little bit easier for concentration, and some it's not so easy. But the good news is we don't have to have really deep concentration to make progress on this path. Mindfulness is really important. Concentration can support mindfulness. You don't have to have really deep concentration. Some concentration, right, is needed. Some settledness, some increased calm, some less distraction, less agitation. So I said that Gil said that 50% of developing concentration is letting go and relaxing. 25% is the intentional effort to stay focused. That is when you notice the mind has left the object, very often it's the breath, to just come back. To just come back, right, to set that intention. And then the last 25% is to have an attitude of equanimity and receptivity. Like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. I'll just bring my attention back to the breath. Instead of, cultivating agitation or noticing every time the mind leaves, then we're having a reaction to it. It's easy for me to sit up here and say this. It's not so easy to do. It's such a habit that when we set a task for ourselves and we find that we're not doing it or it's not turning out the way that we wanted or something like this, to be like a little, maybe perhaps very subtle type of cattle prod to happen. And it takes some practice to just put that down. To say, yeah, of course I'm not, my mind is wandering, I'm not super concentrated. It's just the way it is right now, and maybe it's because I spent a day thinking about all these other things, or maybe it's because I haven't been meditating very long. Maybe I've only been sitting down for however many minutes. It takes patience and consistency. So I've been talking about developing concentration by using the object of the breath, which is very common. It's not the only way, of course. Another way that's also common, but not necessarily taught in this manner, is loving kindness practice. So as you know, here at IMC we have happy hour on Wednesday nights, which I teach with Nikki Mirgafori. And you can do loving kindness practice in such a way that it increases concentration. And the way that we teach it is, there's a number of different elements to it, but one element is to repeat phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And then we just repeat these four phrases silently in the mind. It's kind of like coming back to the breath, but some people find it a little bit easier because the phrases are just enough doing that it's sometimes easier to be kind of like doing something that has a rhythm and has often supports a beautiful, warm-hearted feeling, which helps support equanimity and receptivity. So often loving kindness practice can be another way to get concentrated. And of course, those of you who are familiar with the Brahmaviharas, loving kindness is one of four heart practices, and concentration can be developed with any of those four: loving kindness, sympathetic joy, compassion, or equanimity. So if only 25% is about like setting the intention to get concentrated, what else can help increase the likelihood we'll get concentrated or help support a concentration practice if it's not about just applying more effort or just forcing our minds to do that? And that is creating the conditions to make it more likely that concentration will arise. There's a number of things we can do. One is to increase the amount of meditation. There's a number of ways we can do this. One is to just have longer sitting periods. Often it takes some time. I'm sure you have this experience, right, to kind of settle down. And then if you could stay with it, you often can get settled, get more and more settled. But sometimes our bodies start to complain, right, if we sit too much. So that often takes practice. So it takes I'm thinking back to like the very first meditation retreat I ever went on, right, when I was beginning meditation practice. I was in so much physical pain. I was not meditating. I was just sitting there, just praying for the bell to ring. And I was noticing, like, how is everybody else sitting still? I'm having such a hard time. But now, right, I've been meditating for years. I've gone on lots of retreats, and I can easily sit. But I never really set out, like, I must be able to sit longer time. It just happened. It just happened by doing it more and more. Another way that we can kind of like increase our meditation, if not like increasing the time we're on the cushion or doing some formal meditation, is to do some meditation in daily life. So even mindfulness of what we're doing when we're walking, just to bring our attention to the sensations of walking. And then notice when the mind leaves, just come back to walking. When we're brushing our teeth, when we're picking up our phone, whatever it may be, just to throughout the day, just to like intentionally bring the mind back to whatever object you're choosing. It just makes the mind easier and more willing, or I don't know if that's the right expression, but just makes it more likely we'll do this, right? If we're inclining the mind to go where we wish it to, the more we do that, the easier it becomes. This is not a surprising, it's not a secret. We know this about if we want to increase our cardiovascular capacity, the more we go for walks or runs or whatever it may be, just slowly, slowly our capacity increases. If we want to lift weights, the more often we lift, and maybe the greater pounds that we lift, the more we'll get stronger. It's the exact same thing. It's the same idea. And then, obviously, you can go on retreats, so that's where you spend a lot of concentrated time doing a lot of meditation. And on retreats, if you haven't been on one, they alternate between sitting and walking, sitting and walking. And for a lot of people, I know that the walking times that are in between the sitting times, people are like, oh, okay, we can take a break. Go have a cup of tea, go to the bathroom, maybe go to the room, lay down, rest. They hear the bell. Oh, okay, and then go back to the meditation hall. And that's fine. You may need to take care of yourself. But I have discovered it's really helpful and makes a big difference if you can do some walking meditation before sitting meditation. Something about walking meditation, which is often a little bit, I want to say easier in the sense that it's more, we're not forcing our body to be in an uncomfortable way, and you can walk in a way in which you feel comfortable and you're relaxed. And then just bring your mind to the sensations of walking. If you do that before sitting, then the mind is warmed up in some way or something. Then I just have this experience. I know that if I want to get concentrated, I'll make a real effort to make sure I'm doing walking before sitting. So I offer this as my own experience. I know the teachers talk about this, and this is how retreat schedules are set up too. But not only that, on retreats do you have a opportunity to do, you know, a lot of meditation. You're also kind of secluded. Not kind of, you are secluded from the outside world. You're not, or technically you're not supposed to be updating your Facebook page all the time, or, you know, checking the news, or all these kinds of things, sending emails to everybody. And that allows the mind to relax, too, if we're not always checking in with the outside world and having reactions to what's happening. And especially these days, right, with cell phones, it can be hard to just put all that away. So it often takes a few days. I know at the Insight Meditation Society, on the longer retreats, Insight Meditation Society, which is in Massachusetts, on the longer retreats, maybe I should say this, I've only been there for long retreats. I haven't actually been there for short retreats, so I don't know if they do it for short retreats as well. The long retreats, the past few years, what they started doing is making a whole ceremony about turning in your cell phone. And they don't do this on the first day because nobody wants to turn in their cell phone on the first day. They wait a few days until people have gotten a little bit of calm and are settled. And then it's a whole ceremony where you go up and you hand in your cell phone. It goes into like a basket. And then the senior teacher, bong, rings a bell that's even, it's like maybe twice, three times the size of this one, to kind of like acknowledge this. Sure, you're smiling because you've participated in this too. There's this idea like, okay, let's acknowledge that we're going to put this away. We're going to renounce being connected to the outside world and acknowledge that it's not so easy to do. So something else we can do to create the conditions for concentration is just learning to relax, learning to let go. What are ways to relax? Even independent of meditation or independent of wanting to get concentrated, what does it feel like to get relaxed? What can we do to support relaxation in our lives? What can we do to let go? What I mean by that is notice any holding on that we're doing, holding on to ideas, thoughts about how the world must be, thoughts about how we must be. Anything that we can do to soften that. So then when we are meditating, our bodies, our minds have some experience of relaxing, getting relaxed. If it means bubble baths, listening to music, but just learning like how to relax. So much we have, right, we're kind of like hyped up to do things, to get things going. But just learning to kind of let go and soften in whatever way makes sense to us or is available to us. And then here's a teaching that I really appreciate, and I didn't know about this earlier. Gil Fronstahl and I, we teach at the university together, and we came up with this saying, the gladness pentad. These five qualities that start with gladness, and they flow one right into the other, just naturally. This is in the Buddhist teachings, and this is a part of my experience as well. So they don't. It's not like we have to do a lot of effort, but these qualities just go from the first one to the fifth one, like water goes downhill. It starts with gladness, then it goes to joy, and from joy to tranquility, and from tranquility to happiness, and then from happiness to concentration. So gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration. Right? So these are not striving and hitting ourselves with a version of a cattle prod or something like that. So the way that I think about, well, what's the difference between gladness, joy, and happiness. Often we kind of use those very similarly. One way that I think about this is gladness is like when you're sitting, maybe you feel just a little bit thirsty. It's not a big problem. You're just noticing like, oh yeah, I haven't drunk very much water today. And then you go and get some water, and you drink some water. There's a certain satisfaction, a certain like, oh, okay. It just feels nice. It's not a problem. It's not a big deal. So gladness can be like drinking water. As opposed to joy, maybe a little bit like drinking champagne. Like there's a celebratory quality to it and kind of an energetic quality to it, kind of a bubbliness and maybe a more energetic and it's not as smooth. And then happiness can be like drinking hot chocolate. It's like this, it's comforting, it's there's a real sense of ease and maybe a sense of that's different than if you're drinking water. And it doesn't have kind of the energetic feeling of champagne. So that's how I think about the difference between gladness, joy, and happiness. And the tranquility that's talked about in this gladness pentad often has to do with a lot with the body. To find some ease with the body. So that is, if we're meditating and we find that there is some uncomfortableness, the knees, the back, whatever it may be, is to find a way in which you're not struggling with it. So that your whole meditation period is not about like, oh man, I wish this thing would go away and when is the bell going to ring? Or can you instead have some spaciousness like, okay, there's that feeling in the knee. Hello, feeling in the knee, you know, and just allowing it to be there without a struggle and just have some settledness, certain tranquility, maybe also a feeling of groundedness connected to the ground, connected to the chair or the cushion. So then you may ask, well, what supports gladness if gladness kind of can flow right into concentration and go through through a number of really nice states. Maybe I should add also that it can be that our dominant experience is gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, or concentration. It doesn't have to be. There can be like a little corner of like gladness of our minds. There can be a corner of our experience of happiness. That's enough. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing type of thing, type of experience. Even just having having this scent of happiness, this scent of gladness. That's where we begin. And just noticing or having the knowledge that these things can help be helpful for our practice and can support concentration, then we're more likely to notice them when they arrive. Like, oh yeah, there's a little bit of contentment. I don't know if this is gladness or happiness, but I don't care. I'm just going to call it contentment. Right? You don't have to also get worried about what exactly it is. But there's something, maybe you have this experience, that when we learn about something, we're more likely to notice it in our meditation. And just the noticing it can increase it, can like increase the experience of it, the strength of the experience. So gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, and concentration. So then what helps support gladness to arise? The first one of this penta, so that you can slide into concentration. Virtuous behavior is one. Right? If we are filled with remorse, we're not going to be feeling glad. And there's this expression, the bliss of blamelessness. Of knowing, like, I did the best that I did, that could, and I was didn't do anything dishonest, nothing I'm ashamed of. There can be a certain satisfaction in that can bring some ease, that can be a source of gladness. Like, yes, I don't have anything to hide. I did this in a way that is with real integrity. Something else that can support gladness is the removal of the hindrances. Maybe the word removal is just too strong of a word. Maybe just have the hindrances so that they're like on the back burner, aren't really exerting their power so much that it's not your dominant experience. So what are the hindrances? There are five qualities of mind, five experiences that, not surprisingly, hinder. And they hinder concentration, but they also hinder a sense of well-being and hinder our seeing clearly. So these five, everybody has them. It's part of the human experience. It's part of the meditation experience. It's not a I used to feel like I was like failing if I was experiencing a hindrance. I had this idea, right, that it was a sign that I wasn't a good meditator, and I desperately wanted to be a good meditator, so that if I if these hindrances would arise, I'd get agitated about them. So the five hindrances. The first one, sense desire. Second one, ill will or aversion. Third one, sloth and torpor. Four, restlessness and worry. Five is doubt. So in this series, it's going to start next week. They're going to go into all five of these in a lot of detail, how to work with them, how to notice them. I have to say that I taught this series some time ago. It was really great. It was just to kind of talk about like, oh yeah, that happens to you too. What do you do? And how do you work with it? It was just really helpful. I think that we got a lot of positive feedback, I'll say that. And for myself, it was great to teach it. So sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. So the five hindrances. So the first two, sense desire or ill will, are very similar. They're like the opposite quality, right? They're about wanting. You either want something to come closer or you want it to go away. The second two are like that too. They're opposites, sloth and torpor. Sloth and torpor, it's two words, but it's the third hindrance. One is the mental quality and one's the physical quality. And restlessness or worry, the same thing, one's mental and one's physical. So sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, they're the opposites of energy, right? One's too much energy and one's not enough energy. And then the fifth one is doubt. And that's, this one is not specifically connected with any of the others, but it's often entwined with all the others. And it's not, it's more like skeptical doubt, it's a type of doubt that prevents you from settling down. It's a type of doubt that causes you to hesitate. For example, should I do mindfulness practice or should I do loving kindness? I did loving kindness last time. Okay, I'll do loving kindness. May you be happy. Well, maybe I should do mindfulness. I don't know. Like this doubt, kind of like you're not sure of what to do, or if something arises, you're not quite sure how to respond to it. So that type of doubt. It's okay to have doubt. Like, I'm not so sure about all kinds of things, right? That's okay. We're not saying that you have to believe or know all these things. It's more a type of doubt that you find yourself going around and around with and not going forward. So these five hindrances, one way to work with them is with mindfulness. It turns out if you just turn your attention to them, they often can soften, and we can learn a lot about ourselves, and we can learn a lot about how to work with them. So working with the hindrances is very much a mindfulness practice, which also can support concentration. So in this talk, I talked about like what is concentration. It's a, like being undistracted, unagitated. And a way that we can work with concentration is to relax and to practice with a certain amount of consistency, and if you can, a certain duration. These two types of things really help. And to create the conditions of learning about the hindrances, and also learn about gladness and things that can support a sense of contentment or well-being. So with that, I want to thank you for your attention, and I'll be up here if you have some concentration, some questions you'd like to ask me. Thank you.